All right, let's do this. How are you, what the fuckers, what the fuck buddies, what the fucksters? How are you, what the fucking ears, what the fuckadelics? Yes, yes, this is Mark Maron. This is my show. This is WTF, the podcast. I'm talking. Today on the show, we have the wonderful Gerard Carmichael, a young gun, a guy with the goods. It was a good talk, man. It was intense and funny and lit up. He's all lit up, this dude. He's got a show on, what is it? Where's that show going to be happening? It's going to be the Carmichael Show. Premieres this week, actually, Wednesday at 9, 8 Central on NBC. And I'd reached out to him before because there was a lot of buzz. There was a lot of heat on this man, Carmichael. Smart, funny fucker. I did Real Time the other day. I was on Real Time with Bill Maher, and I think it went pretty well. I felt good about it, and I approached it a different way than I usually do. Now, I think Bill's great. I like Bill. I know he's a difficult personality for some people. Some people love to hate him. Some people love to love him. But he's very good at what he does. He's very on top of it. He does his homework. He's part of the dialogue. It's all real and happening right then. His monologues are written by brilliant dudes. I know a lot of them. Billy Martin, Chris Kelly. And you know, he delivers jokes like a dirty Johnny Carson. He's a classic television monologist, and the show is what it is. It's political, but it's been around for 13 seasons or so. It's a working machine, and sometimes it packs a punch, man. So I'm always thrilled when I get to go on there, but it does mean I have to reimmerse myself in the world of politics a bit and get up to speed. And I'm always surprised at just how far I've drifted. Yes, I interviewed the president, but I used to spend a lot of time on the pulse of politics every fucking day, crunching the news, figuring out the angle, getting involved with the pace of the bullshit. And I got to be honest with you, choosing to pull myself out of that was the best decision I ever made in my life. But sometimes I feel a little out of the loop. So getting up to speed was exciting. Doesn't take much to get up to speed. But the point was, or is, that generally when I get the topics for Real Time, I just freak out. And I'm like, I got to write a bunch of jokes. And I got to find my place to put them in there. And I had some opinions on some stuff and I had some things I wanted to talk about. But I also didn't want to come off as a self-righteous, strident, angry asshole. I know that guy. That guy lives within me. That guy is a guy that wants to take me down from the inside. And he's punching my brain right behind my eyes right now sometimes. But I know for me that when I get that kind of fire going, when I feel that crack hit of rage, that it's not always about what's coming out of my mouth or what I think it's about. It's usually about that crack hit of rage. And I think there's consensus on crack's not good for you, and rage isn't great for you either. But this time I just tried to do something different. I tried to honor who I am, and I want to honor who I am in every conversation and where I've been coming from. So I just I got up to speed. I talked to my producer, Brendan, who's a political wizard of sorts, knows what's going on in all things. Don't even know where he gets time to load his brain up with shit. But he knows everything about everything on a day-to-day basis. I think he actually has some sort of USB plug in the back of his brain that you know, just plugs into the back of his head, and he just downloads the internet every day. He's one of those guys. But he's up to speed, and he can get me the angles that I need and get me the info I need. So I go over the stuff. I go over the Trump. I go over the Hillary. I go over a little bit of Social Security, but that gets in the weeds a bit. Go over a little bit of the Obamacare business, some Ashley Madison stuff. I get up to – I'm all of a sudden, like, you know, involved in the news of the day. So instead of being compulsive and freaking myself out and panicking about jokes, I just panicked in general, and I just, you know, got an angle on stuff and thought about things and, you know, thought about how I'd respond to things maybe if I had the opportunity. And I was on the show with Senator Claire McCaskill, Representative Donna Edwards, Charles Cook, a British dude, writes for the National Review, sort of a Hitchens-esque intellectual sort. And a guy named Dan Buettner, I believe is how you would say his name. We wrote a book about blue zones, I think they're called, where people live longer. Whatever the case, we did the thing, and I felt good about it. And it's always great to see Bill work, because it's one of those things where you're dealing with a professional comedian who's been at it a long time, that has broadened his spectrum and is able to do what he does. No one really does what he does, and he mixes it up. You know, he's just solid. He's been at it a long time, and he's got it, and he's got a thing. You gotta Yeah, hats off to those guys. But he's also, I like to watch Bill work, and I like talking to him. He's very quick. So we do the show. Now, this is about anger, really. It's really about anger. And I got a guy I know who was in town. I'm not going to mention names. You know, he's trying to get into the racket, get into the business, one way or the other. I'm not even sure how. But he's an all right guy. I like the guy. But after I do the real time, I go do a spot. I run up to the Comedy Store, I do a spot, and I run into my old buddy Tom Rhodes, who I haven't seen in a long time. Tom Rhodes has come in from the road, and he's now got himself an apartment here in Los Angeles. Tom Rhodes is a great comedian, an old friend of mine. Spent about a decade out there living the life of a roaming gypsy internationally, doing the stand-up, living hotel to hotel, and living the life. But he's settling down. It was nice to see him. So me, Tom Rhodes, and this cat go out to Cantor's to stuff our faces with some unhealthy Jew food. After I got off stage at Real Time, this cat had said to me, like, I'm a little surprised that you didn't call Bill out on his racism on that one joke. He's from Texas. And I'm like, well, I didn't register it as racist at all. Are you familiar with what Bill does? He sort of pushes the envelope a little bit, but I didn't register it. He's like, oh, well, it felt racist to me, and I'm surprised that you didn't call him out. I'm like, who the fuck? You know, like, I felt it right then. And this was right after the show. It's like, I'm going to sit there on Bill Maher's show and talk shit to Bill Maher about, you know, his choice. It's just like, not only did it not register as racist, but like, who says that to a guy? You think you would have, like, just like, you know, you would have gone, you know, it's like you're lying to yourself. It's just, it's like the fucking equivalent in show business of some sort of armchair quarterback. You know, guys have done very little to show for themselves, and they'll just sit there and just sort of like, yeah, you know what you should have done. Yeah, I know what you should do right now. Shut the fuck up. But, you know, everyone's entitled to his opinion. So we made it through that. And I'm like, well, I get where you're coming from, but I just think you're wrong. So then we get to Cantor's, and he just starts going on again. He just starts continuing. I'm like, I don't like Bill Maher. He's not a very good comedian. I'm like, what are you talking about? He's a great comedian. And his monologues, you know, he does like a Carson-style monologue. He's very tight. And I just don't like him. I'm like, this is a guy that's, you know, built a thing that works. And not only that, he's a button pusher, and we need button pushers. And he's an antagonist. He's a provocateur. He's a shit starter. So, you know, no matter what you think of him or how the show is now or what he used to be, whatever, you know, he's good at what he does, and it's necessary that someone is out there doing that. Okay, this isn't about Bill Maher. This is about where my self-righteous comes from, you know. Now, the last time I'd seen this cat, I did a show of his that he hosted in Austin, and it took place at an abandoned shopping mall where he had a TV operation set up. And yeah, I talked to him. I like the guy. It's not an issue. It's not about not liking the guy. It's just like we're sitting at Cantor's. He's like, I just don't think that Bill Maher works hard enough on his comedy. And I'm like, what does that mean? You know, he does a weekly show that requires a lot of research and organization. I mean, I'm not getting it. He's like, no, I'm okay with the show. Just don't think he works very hard on his comedy. It's like, what fucking difference does it make? I got his opinion, but he wouldn't let it go. And I just finally, I was like, who the fuck are you to sort of shit on a lifer? Look, if you're a comic, I respect, and we're sitting there and we're shitting on people, that happens. Does it come from insecurity? Does it come from bitterness? Does it come from, you know, honest to God, you know, reasonable criticism? All of the above. But if you're a guy that's just a comer and, you know, and you know, I don't know what you've done. The last time I saw that guy, he was wearing a bathrobe and a wig. Fine. I mean, I don't know what kind of show he does, and maybe it's my fault. But the truth of the matter is, it's like I just blew up, and I felt that crack hit of rage. I'm just sort of like, what the fuck? And I felt it congeal and come out of my face like a thought fist. And it felt good in the moment. But, you know, afterwards, I didn't feel great. And I had to apologize and just rephrase it and just agree to disagree. But it's very funny about how emotional I'm getting about my business, about people who are in my business, respecting the people in my business, and, you know, understanding the struggles that we all have and what it, and how hard it is to get successful. I've also become very emotional about little things and like I'm just emotional. Just seriously, man. I mean, where's your opinion coming from? Where does it come from? Like, why am I saying what I'm saying about that person? Is it something I really feel? Is it thought through? Is it grounded in something intellectual or rational? Something, is it a reasonable criticism? Or is it just me being a dick? It's tricky, hard to tell. All right, I'm very excited now to share with you my conversation with Jerrod Carmichael, a new comedy star. The Carmichael Show premieres this Wednesday at 9, 8 Central on NBC. So check that out and let's talk to Jerrod.
Yeah. Have you ever been on stage and you hear the like you hear your voice back?
Sometimes that's terrifying because if you're hearing that and you're noticing it, yes. It's not going well.
But sometimes it's like I feel like I'm recording a song and I'm immediately listening to playback. And sometimes I'm like, this rhythm's bad. It's not a bad rhythm.
So you can detach from it enough to like, I mean, you have a certain amount of persistence and perseverance, no matter how it's going up there.
Yes. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So I guess sometimes like it's nice to when things aren't going well, if you can hear your own voice, just go, that's enough. That's entertaining enough for me.
Yeah. It's like, here's the thing. It's like, it kind of is like sex where it's like, if you had great sex before, you know it's out there, you know it's
sure.
possible.
Right.
And even in the middle of not so great sex,
it's
you're
still
like,
okay.
It's still okay. You still know, you still got a goal. You're gonna get back out there.
Sure, right. You're like that on stage, you're like, well, this chick's not that into it.
It's not into
it. We're not locked in. We're not connecting the way I want.
Yeah.
But she seems to be volunteering for it.
So, look, we can get through this, you know, yeah. Next time, yeah. Same chick, different chick,
that's
we'll
good.
Figure it out.
I wish I had that disposition. It was always I didn't when I started, but I think I have it more now.
Yeah.
It used to always be a fight with me. It was just let's provoke these fuckers.
Yeah.
And see how far I can push them.
Yeah.
And then, and even when they come around, let's make it worse.
There's no reward. There was no reward
for them. Not really. Not really.
It was all like, oh, okay.
Well, did you always, was it always your intention to be an entertainer? I mean, because I sometimes, when I started, and I know the kind of shit that you kind of push,
yeah.
That there's something about, there might be a difference between being a comedian and being an entertainer sometimes.
Yeah, and it's funny because I do have this innate desire to be an entertainer, right?
But
like when on stage, especially when I know an audience hasn't been pushed to that place,
yeah.
Like, you know, I mean, part of the beauty of doing, I think, comedy in like New York and LA,
yeah.
is that like it's these marathon shows. So you are finding out where you fit in. And like within a lineup,
right?
Also,
how do you define your shit?
How do you define your shit?
Right.
Like how is this exactly? Like how do I stand out amongst all these other guys? So it's like
in 12 minutes.
So if you feel like an audience hasn't been pushed, right?
Yeah.
And you feel like everyone's just giving applesauce.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like you gotta put a little medicine in.
Yeah. Yeah. Here's a bowl of shit.
And sometimes you give them a bowl of shit.
Yeah. Like some sugar on it. Look what I just did. I just fucked your heads. You'll remember that. You didn't laugh much, but you'll remember.
You'll never forget this.
That's right.
Which is a major percentage of it.
It's not a bad thing.
Yeah.
Not a bad thing.
Because I've laughed at some guys and then been like, what's his name?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, sure. Like a lot of times you go to clubs and it's hard to differentiate between the point of view.
Yeah.
Like, that's the thing. It's like you can hear different voices and shit.
Yes.
But you listen, is a point of view sort of the same?
Yes.
There's a detachment from it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
But I think that like what you seem to have been doing is just taking the risks to define, like in my mind, the stage is your territory. You can do whatever the fuck you want with
Absolutely.
It.
Absolutely.
That's like what we were talking about with Miles Davis in The House, mm-hmm. is that you can push it all you want. And by doing that, even when you push too far, you know, you at least know the space you have to work with.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. You know, you know all the rules.
Right.
Then break all of them.
Right. For a little while.
For a little while. And, but I mean, it's like, why the fuck do we want to do the same thing that everybody else is doing?
No.
What? That's the most boring. That's not art. It stops being art. And that is, it's like, where I got to get off board because it's just so boring.
Right. And there's also that point where you're like, well, how much of what I'm doing is, like, there's a difference between pushing people farther than they're willing to go and just being truly yourself.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
That's, I think, what you're trying to find out. What's in between that? So I can fuck with them this much, but why am I really doing that?
Yes. When it stops being honest, you have to. Because it's like we both say things that are edgier, but you can tell. I think they're honest thoughts.
Right.
It's not like, and then, you know.
Take that.
Yeah, shocking.
Yeah.
Because that's fruitless. That has not, that, you know, it's like, this is an honest thought. Like, it may be fucked up, and it may be, but this is an honest feeling that I've had. It's an honest thought that I've had.
Right,
this is an honest way I've viewed something.
Right.
And I'm not afraid to share that with you.
And that way, even if it's, you know, provocative or shocking, at least you have this connection with the audience that's authentic.
Yeah.
Not just, because, like, if you're just doing shock shit, that's really defensive. Like, you're actually hiding.
You're hiding. You're hiding behind, you know, buzzwords.
Yeah, this bullshit.
Yeah, yeah. Sort of like, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Abortion.
Right.
Blah, blah, blah. Molestation.
Right.
Blah, blah, blah.
Right.
And then I fucked her. Like, it's like, what are you even saying?
Is there much of that around anymore? Is that still happening?
I mean,
like, a little bit.
I think so, a little bit.
It's a little tired, though, right? Because you feel it, that they're just trying to.
Well, now it's gone to where shock existed. Now it's been replaced with absurdity.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
And we went through.
Oh, that's
like,
back.
The absurdity of just like, and this is the most absurd thing that I could
that
say.
Can ever say.
You know what's funny though? But some guys had a friend, Angelo Bowers, who
the guy who died,
the guy who passed away.
Was that New York?
That was here. That was here. Yes,
in a
started
car
with him. Car accident.
That was started horrible. I remember that guy. Started here?
He started here.
Did you start here?
I started here as well, yes.
Uh-huh.
And he was so, nothing he said on stage was the truth.
Yeah.
Everything that he said was kind of like just these made up things. If you knew him, you knew that's how his mind worked. It's like when you watch, you know, Jim Carrey, you know, or watch, you know, Robin Williams and these things, they aren't just saying, so, you know, the other day my wife, it's not like just these personal stories,
right.
But it's true to their sense of humor.
That's right. If you can feel who they are, then that's cool.
Yes. And Angela would say some of the most absurd things in the world, but I usually don't necessarily connect that well with some of that sense of humor when it feels contrived.
Right.
But it didn't feel contrived with him. Like,
because you knew him. You got feel for him.
Yeah. He more than anybody inspired me to be more myself.
Right.
Like, more than anyone I've met. Like, he's just like that guy.
Yeah.
It's probably I dedicated my special to him because he's probably like one of my biggest inspirations in comedy.
Really?
Absolutely.
It's nice when they're your peers.
It's amazing when every day just hitting mics, just mic after mic after mic with Angelo was one of the most beautiful experiences of my life.
That's
like
sweet,
it really
man.
Was always new stuff, and we would always. I remember we did a Montreal, my first
festival?
Montreal audition. We were
right,
the audition.
Yeah.
And I saw him writing his notebook, and I was writing in mine. And I remember walking over to him and whispering, "Like, you know, we're probably the only two comics in the country trying new shit Montreal audition, right?" Like, and we just wanted to, like, we just had to take that risk. We had to take that chance, and
we're the only two comics willing to sabotage our sets because we're the real deal.
Exactly.
Fuck these people.
But really, kinda, right?
Sure, man. Believe me. I know.
I love the people of Montreal, but like, as far as industry is like, it's like, if you can't be yourself, then what's the point?
No, that's true. And it took me a long time to learn certain lessons about that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there's it's part of our nature as comics usually. Like, if you got the bug to do this when you were a little kid, there's a lot of fuck you in it.
No, but have you not? No, there's an insane amount of fear in comedy.
Of course.
I talk to guys about even staying on Montreal, right?
Yeah.
And I would talk to guys, and they would say, "Well, I hear the people of Montreal like it when you do this or you do that." And I'm like, "Who can do your be yourself?"
Well, then you go, and then you say, "Like, oh, I don't do that."
Yeah, yeah, I don't do that. It's why I haven't done a late night set.
Yeah,
because I was like, "Oh, well, then if I can't just go be exactly myself,
that's the trick, man, right?"
Yeah,
because like I think back in the day, the late night sets, at least you had 7 minutes, eight minutes. Maybe you had a shot in 8 minutes.
Yes.
Now at four and a half. It's hard.
You almost have to write these setup punch things, yeah, even if it's not you.
Right, you got to find the three jokes,
yes,
that you can mash together.
Yes.
No, I mean, when I was doing those sets, I knew I wasn't going to be exactly what I am in a live situation. Mm-hmm. But in my mind, I was like, well, this is part of the job. I'm a comedian. Yeah. I get to be on TV in this context.
Yeah.
That's one of the available outlets. How do I fucking master that? That was the way I thought about
it. I mean, which is a great way of thinking. It's like it's almost, in a good sense, it's a great business way of thinking.
Which is like, you know, we're comics, that's part of the job. And there, at some point, I got that in my head.
Yeah.
Like, every one of our heroes did that shit.
Yes. Yes, but it's like anything else, right? Like with the sitcom, with everything, when it starts becoming a thing, that's when it gets dangerous. Because
it's hard.
Doing a Tonight Show set, sometimes I see guys, some of my friends, and I'm like, they got the suit on.
Yeah, that's
always you would never do that. You would never do that.
Well, I think when you were younger, and like you're coming up in a different time, mm-hmm, that you know, when there was just like three or four outlets.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And the thing was, you know, Letterman or Carson, you know, or Leno afterwards. I didn't have much. I didn't do Leno till the last year he was there, just because I got my shit.
Yeah. Well, also, my personal philosophy is like, only do things that would look good in a time capsule.
Right.
So like, you're the last year of like a thing.
Well, it was one of those things where I never had that much respect for him necessarily. Like, he used to be a great comic, but he was sort of a pander monkey on the Tonight Show. But like, when
I've
never
heard pander monkey before.
But when I was a kid and coming up, it's like Letterman was the guy.
Yeah.
And we, like, that was the grail.
Yeah.
So when you did your first Letterman, you were like, holy fuck.
Yeah.
And it was pretty amazing because it was this huge theater. It was cold in there and it was a real theater and you respected Dave and you wanted him to like you.
Yeah.
But I wore a fucking suit and it was a shiny suit, dude.
Really?
Yeah. I didn't know how shiny it was. But I look at that first set and it was tight as fuck and it was good and it was me, but it wasn't like me that you'd see in a club.
Yeah.
There's no way to do that really in 5 minutes, 6 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah. It's
so you just avoid it altogether?
Yeah. I attempted to do one.
Where?
I got Letterman, actually. Uh-huh. I got a note. It was like, I sent in a tape and it was like, we prefer more set up punchline. Like, that structure. And I was like, oh, well, I'm cool.
What? So you're not doing it?
So I just didn't do it.
Huh. Like, I don't know how you work, but I feel like we work similar. Like, you know, you write ideas and then you just talk them out. Is that what you do? I mean, you don't write jokes.
It's like ideas as thoughts.
Right, so you through a certain amount of repetition, it polishes itself and grows up in public.
Yes.
The joke.
Thing. Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, is it like, I just had an experience last night at the store where I've been doing this line and this bit for a few months now,
mm-hmm,
but it just never didn't click as hard as I wanted. I never understood why, because it ties back into an earlier part of the bit. And last night, it just like it did what it was supposed to do.
Yeah,
but it took months, and I can't tell you why. I don't know why.
Yeah, it just did.
Right,
it just did.
It had its night.
Yeah, sometimes a line I wrote in 2010.
Oh yeah,
just shows up.
Right, or how
and
about
you're like, oh, I know. Oh, I know how to talk about this.
Right.
Now. Yeah.
Yeah. I fold shit back in sometimes, or different pieces of shit from the. Or how about when a punchline is delivered to you? You know, when you've got a bit and it's not all done, but it's funny enough.
Yes.
And then you're just doing it, and then one night this thing drops in, and you're like, where'd that fucking come
from?
The
whole time?
Yeah.
The whole time. That should have, that's what
was waiting
missing
to happen. Right.
This whole time. Like, oh man, that's right.
And then you're like, I got to go back and do my special again.
I did that. I put Unfinished Thoughts on the special.
Yeah. Wasn't that what it was called?
Yeah. Unfinished, it was some Unfinished Thoughts. It was some thoughts. It's just like, oh yeah, no. And then there's that.
Well, where did, like, you started here, but you didn't grow up here?
I'm from North Carolina. I grew up in North Carolina.
What part?
Winston-Salem.
Really?
Yeah.
I like North Carolina.
Do you?
Yeah, I was.
I
tell you, weirdly, as I get older, for some reason, I was, you know, very judgmental of the South for very specific reasons,
mm-hmm,
and a lot of them were probably real, but they weren't my life, and a lot of them had to do with stereotyping, you know?
Yeah.
But as I go back now, I'm like, fucking, this part of the country, although... I used to do a joke that was like, in the American South, there's an ignorance that runs so deep, it actually has integrity.
Ha! So, that's the whole Confederate thing, right?
Right.
It's ignorance that transforms into integrity.
It is almost what it is.
You know,
it
like,
defines
you
know, the place.
Yes.
Yeah. Even if it's, thank God it's not as active, but you know, clearly racism exists. But the region is charming. Like, yes. It's beautiful country, good people for the most part.
You know what I admire is sometimes just the ability to just hold on to something. The problem is sometimes it's the wrong thing.
Yeah.
But just to hold on to something, just to have a set of values.
Gotta believe in something.
That you just hold on to it, and life just is a bit clearer.
Right. Wrong-minded shit, but he's committed.
He's committed, man. He's committed. The grand wizard of the KKK.
Evil motherfucker, but he knows
what
he thinks.
Evil motherfucker, but think about how simple his life is.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he wakes up. He's like, do you still hate niggas? Yep.
Yeah.
Still don't like them.
Yeah. Time for breakfast.
He eats his waffles.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? His life is pretty simple.
He eats his chicken and waffles.
He eats his chicken and waffles, which is ironic as fuck.
Exactly.
We said it's ignorant.
Yeah.
But it's like just this guy that just has a simple life. It's like you're holding on. If he just adjusted that, just changed one word to love, right? Same simple life is just,
Well, that's the weird thing about that. And, you know, and I talked to President Obama, who was sitting right in that
chair. By the way.
Yeah. That's his cup. Yeah.
Is that his cup?
Yeah. Look at who else's cup would that be? It's got the presidential seal on it.
So who brings this in?
A little lady. He's got a little lady with him.
It's always a little lady.
Yeah. But, I don't know if it's always a little lady, but they have a food person.
And she comes.
With his tea and his, and then puts that in there when he sits down.
Did you offer?
Yeah.
And you offer.
Sure.
And he says...
She came in before, so he was set up. He had a water.
So
he had
even before
I'm not
you
get offer
a
him
chance.
Cereal. What am I going to offer him? You want a bowl of cereal? I don't got a lot of shit in the house. Maybe got some bran flakes, some raisins. You want some of that?
Why not?
I know, just to see. He would have. I had a lot more on my mind, dude.
It would be. I know. By the way, how dope! That was a great thing.
Yeah,
that was an amazing thing. I was like, I think I was supposed to be here. I got bumped for Obama. I got bumped, by the way.
Yeah, he told me to book you. He said, Obama said, I'm a fan of that Carmichael kid.
I was like, cool. I've gotten bumped by worse.
That's right. You did get bumped by Obama.
I got bumped by Obama. I was like, I got bumped by worse. So yeah. I can handle that. Yeah.
So North Carolina, when did you leave there? How old were you?
20.
You were 20.
Left.
So you just said, Mom, I'm going?
Yeah, basically. I was working at a shoe store.
In
Winston-Salem, and a guy came in, and I was thinking about moving to L.A. I was once again going back to wanting to be an entertainer.
But what, you were in high school?
I just out of high school. It's this gray area of just doing nothing.
Sure. What am I going to do?
Yeah. You know, part-time in a shoe store, whatever.
Like shoes or sneakers, like, or real shoes?
Finish Line, sneakers.
Oh, yeah.
What do you have on? Okay,
sandals.
No, I can't give you any information on those.
I'm sorry. I got nice shoes. I got boots, man. I got Red Wing boots. I'm a boot guy.
We didn't sell you. Yeah. You would have hated everything in the store.
No, if I needed sneakers, I would have been all right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But like,
was
just
that a mall?
In,
you had a mall?
At a mall. At a mall.
Big mall,
Walkers,
small mall?
A decent sized mall.
Uh-huh.
Pretty decent sized
mall.
So
you're eating at the Chick-fil-A?
I'm eating at that Chick-fil-A a lot. Yeah. I'm eating at that Chick-fil-A a lot. There was a Burger King upstairs. Yeah, there was a Sheetz.
Sheetz. I don't even know what that is.
You've been on
a... local chain?
You've driven by one...
A Sheetz.
On your way to a hotel somewhere in the middle. It's a food place.
Uh-huh.
Some places a food place and gas station.
Yeah, yeah,
I didn't say it was classy. Yeah, it's a food court.
Okay, yeah.
We were, so just all of that. And I was thinking about moving to L.A.
To do comedy.
I wanted to be an entertainer. I always wanted a show. I always wanted... It's these things.
That vague?
Not specific. I didn't know
you
I wanted
to be in
to do
show
stand-up.
Business.
Wanted to be in show business.
Didn't
always
know you
intrigued,
wanted to do stand-up.
Didn't know specifically stand-up. I thought that it was like almost arrogant to just be like, oh, really? I'm that guy? Like, oh, I know what funny is. I'm not one of those guys.
But what did you grow up with? You got siblings?
I have an older brother, Joe. Yeah.
What's he do?
Joe is now like a stay-at-home dad, and
really?
And like loves it.
Yeah, why wouldn't you?
He loves it.
So wife's working.
My sister, it's my sister-in-law.
Yeah.
She's been in the family for so long. I just say sister.
Yeah.
Look at her as a sister, and she's, you know, working. She's in education.
Nice. And how many kids they got?
Smart. They have two.
Uh huh.
I have a niece and nephew.
And he's just doing that thing.
He's a great dad, which is weird watching your brother be like a great dad.
How much
like
older
the
is
guy,
he?
He's 8 years older than me.
Oh, really?
And so the guy that used to just punch me in the chest is now
8 years older. He's punching in the chest.
Man.
What were you like? Poo?
Punishment. Yeah. He waited till I was three.
Oh, that's good.
And in respect to Joe,
yeah,
he waited till I was three before
to
hit me in the chest.
He was 11.
Yeah, he was 11.
So he's just jealous of this little fuck that showed up taking all the attention.
Yeah, well, I was also probably, I was a bit over, I was a lot as a kid.
Oh,
yeah. And
you're a lot as an adult.
For the love of God. For the love of God. older brother wanted to be in showbiz. A guy comes in, right?
To the store. Yeah.
I don't even know how we got on the conversation. I think small talk of just, what do you do?
Right.
And he says, I'm an actor out in L.A., right?
Yeah.
I don't know what his name is.
Uh-huh.
I don't know why he was in Winston-Salem. I don't know if he's from Winston-Salem.
Yeah.
But he said, I was like, that sounds so cool, man. I was like, I really want to do that.
Huh.
And he said, just move.
Yeah.
I was like,
what?
And then he said, I'd never heard of Craigslist. I'd never heard of West Side Rentals. He told me, he was like, just go on there and find a place. I was like, I saved up what little money I had. My sister bought me a plane ticket, and I'm in LA in like 6 months.
Really?
Yeah.
No plans.
I wanted to do by that point, I knew it would. I have a great friend, Ashley, who kept saying, it's stand up. You have to do
this. Is someone you grew up with?
Someone I went to high school with, grew up with, great friend of mine. And she was you have to do stand-up.
Did you listen to stand-up?
Yeah, I loved stand-up.
When you were a kid?
Yeah, prior Cosby.
That was it.
Sinbad.
Yeah, sure.
Carlin.
Yeah.
Louis Black.
Sure.
You know, the ones that just really stand out to me.
I like Sinbad's in there.
Sinbad's in there. Yeah, yeah. Sinbad, by the way, talk about not writing anything down. Put on shows, man.
No, big shows.
Sinbad put on shows.
He wore some outfits.
Yeah, my buddy Jamar just texted me. He was just like, hey, man, I'm watching a Sinbad special, man. You got to rewatch it.
Yeah.
I haven't watched it in a while. I saw him in at South By. It just destroys.
Sure. Oh, yeah.
You know, like just
real
amazing,
entertainer. Yeah.
Real entertainer. And so, we watched, and
the two sides of that thing are like Sinbad and Cat. The guys that just are like, Cat Williams will ramble darkly and blow your mind, and Sinbad just going to ramble and bring you up.
He's going to bring you up.
Yeah.
He's going to bring you up, man. It's going to be fun. Afros and bell bottles, man.
Yeah.
And he's just a great entertainer. And we watched a lot of stand-up. We were into it, and we really watched. And my dad was very much so, this is Richard Pryor. This is why I like him.
And, your dad would sit down with you and say that?
Oh, absolutely.
Here's the record. Let's put on the CD.
Yes, and let's listen. And why? And because, and part, a lot of the exploration of my stand-up is like, why? The why. My family is very much so, great at articulating why something. Why they like Richard. Not just he's funny. It was like, this is why.
What'd your old man do?
He's a truck driver.
Okay,
he's a truck driver.
He loves it. He's in the truck. He's listening to this shit.
Yeah,
he's listening to it all his life.
Yeah, listening all his life.
What did he say to you? Why?
Because it was important what he was saying. It was important and it was interesting.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Uh-huh. Like it was, and that always stuck with me. Like, it's just like, I don't want to just say nonsense. It's like, it was important.
Provocative.
Yeah, provocative, but in the best sense of the word.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like going back to what we're saying, not shocking, like genuinely provocative.
A lot of heart.
Like, the man really exposed his soul when he's up there.
Rough stuff, man.
Yeah, rough stuff. And just going there and talking about Bill Cosby told me about seeing Richard Pryor on stage, which was, by the way, a great.
So wait, you had an audience with Bill Cosby?
I went to Bill Cosby's house. I talked to Bill
before
Cosby.
The shit hit the fan.
Before the shit hit the fan, yeah.
So Bill Cosby, how does he reach out to you?
I get a phone call from my agent.
Yeah.
Says, hey, Gerard, what are you doing tomorrow at 3?
Yeah.
Mr. Cosby would like to speak with you.
This is before Hannibal dropped the bomb.
This is before before Hannibal dropped the bomb.
Before Hannibal, not knowingly.
Unknowingly. Dropped the bomb.
Okay. But on information that was sort of out there anyway. So,
yes.
So, okay, so you're like, fuck yeah, I'll go talk to Bill Cosby.
Yeah, fuck yeah. Yeah, it's like, even if I had plans, I'm going to go talk to Bill Cosby.
But that's interesting to me because, there is a, I think even in your relationship with Spike Lee.
Yes.
That, when they see a guy that's mm-hmm. got the juice
mm-hmm.
and that's going to, represent black entertainment on some level.
Yeah.
That they're going to like, well, we're the guys. We're gonna sit this guy down.
There is a bit of responsibility.
Yeah, I agree. That was why Cosby, I imagine.
Yeah. I just signed. I've been with in a deal with NBC for years.
Yeah.
So I just signed the deal.
Oh, and he had a deal too.
He had a deal too.
Oh, so
actually, this was before he had a deal with NBC.
Oh, so he saw
the new deal.
Maybe he saw you as a threat. Who's this punk?
Like, let me go see. Yeah, let me go see. Take this motherfucker about. Yeah, yeah, yeah. all right, kid.
Yeah.
And he told me a story about seeing Richard Pryor on stage.
What year?
Like early 70s.
Okay. So when Richard was big or right before?
This was right before. This is during the transition.
Right. Okay.
And he said he saw Pryor lose an audience for 35 minutes.
Mm. Something so, that he would never do.
Yeah. Bill. No, yeah. Never. He always has you. Pryor, he said he saw him not have them, and he said he was just explaining. He was just explaining stuff for like 35. It was like and
trying to find
emotionally
it.
explaining. Yeah.
He emotionally said, and then
at the 35th minute, he said something clicked, and then he said for the next hour, and this is coming from Bill Cosby, which controversy aside, I mean, you know,
right.
is you know
Bill Cosby,
Bill Cosby, yeah. right? And so
not Bill Cosby,
not
the
Bill
rapist.
Cosby. Yes,
Bill Cosby, the comedian,
the excellent comedian, yeah. Bill Cosby. He said that he'd never seen someone have an audience eat out of their hand so well.
Uh huh.
For an hour.
Yeah.
For an hour.
What's interesting about Richard Pryor, it seems to like even like did you read that Scott Saul book?
No, I haven't.
I'll give it to you.
Thank you. Yeah, because I would love to.
I got it.
I already read it.
But it's like it's about that time. It's only about up to like 73 or 74. It's mm-hmm. it's right up to after when he started making the bad movies, like after his arc.
Yeah,
you know what
yeah,
I mean.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's where it stops. So it's through Oakland, through Berkeley, through you know his transition. Like
that's
it's
beautiful.
It's good and it's journalistic. He talked to you know family members that were willing to talk. Like he did his fucking homework.
Oh, that's amazing.
And it's a sweet piece of. It's a portal into that period of Pryor because we all make assumptions. What the fuck do we know?
Yes.
So like, you know, when he was in Oakland, you know, he was like, he had thrown away being a Cosby clone and he wanted to be an artist.
He wanted to be an artist.
But he was doing weird shit like poetry, you know, and like, you know, theater stuff. Like he was really, it's the 60s, he's going out there.
Mm-hmm.
But even in that documentary recently where he was taping that special, one of the specials, and he did a whole taping and he said, I didn't do it. I didn't hit it.
Oh yeah,
it's not
well. Mythologic. I mean, bombed
right
first night of his welcome back live on the Sunset Strip at the Palladium.
Right, that's it. Stevie that's the one I'm talking
about. Stevie Wonder's in the audience.
Right, that's
you know
what
I mean.
I'm talking
like, and he's just and it just wasn't as nice. But
because he lives because he put so much in, dude. Like you know,
yes.
like you know, there's very few comics, and maybe you're one of them. And you know, is that. Every performance is sort of a life or death thing. It's not you're not going up there protected by an act.
Oh,
you're
no.
going out there on the fucking
you
ice.
Fly
right.
You got to fly. Yeah.
Yeah.
And if I don't, I have to feel connected to what I'm saying, it's just
the worst.
Not, it's the
Dude,
worst.
Like you're, it's like you're a zombie.
Yeah.
If you're not.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I would just be in accounting.
Yeah.
If I wanted to just repeat.
Right.
You know what I mean?
If you don't feel the juice of connection and
if you don't
and
feel the
with yourself and the audience.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
What else did Cosby say?
I mean,
he must have been teaching you a lesson. He had to school you a little bit.
You know, it was, he was, I told him about the idea I had for the show.
Yeah.
He thought that was cool. We talked about comedy. We talked about, I mean, he said he's actually, you know, not anti, he kind of said what we were saying about, like, he just doesn't like shock. He doesn't like
uh-huh.
curse words as a crutch as opposed
a crutch.
To,
right.
yeah, as opposed to, you know, he's like, because yeah. when you're doing the clubs, you know, late night, you know,
right.
sometimes, you know, it's easier to just throw in these words. And if it's, he's saying as a crutch, he doesn't like it.
Yeah.
Which
well,
is
interesting.
His right. And, you know.
Right. But it was interesting because Cosby defined that modern black comic thing,
mm-hmm.
you know, that wasn't political.
Yeah.
That was family oriented.
Yes.
That was clean storytelling, but you know, provocative in his own way.
In his own way.
Right.
I actually just talked about that with someone recently about how when talking about family, there it was kind of provocative when you think about the way he spoke about his children, the way he spoke about it was kind of a raw,
sure.
a more raw
and,
way.
And then Noah
of
bit is kind of provocative in biblical interpretation.
Yes. And
yes.
for the times and
sure.
in that and in context.
But a little harmless.
But a little harmless.
Because at that time, I mean, you do have Dick Gregory. You know, you got Godfrey Cambridge. You got people that are, you know, pushing, you know, in a different direction.
Yeah.
But like, but the point I was making is at that time, even in the late 60s, early 70s in Hollywood, you know, you had the Cosby camp, but then you had Red Fox, who had his own fucking nightclub.
Yes.
Like down on like La Cienega or something.
Do you know where it was? Because I was actually trying to Google this recently because Pryor recorded an album there. And I was like, where is the club? I wanted to know where the club was. What's the building?
I'm going to go stand in the building.
I want to go stand in the building.
So now, like, given that you had this conversation, like, he didn't give you any warnings. Like, he didn't say, be careful of this or that. Did he give you any wisdom that you were like, oh, yeah, okay, I'll look out for that shit?
It wasn't the kind that we've read about, like, one that's just very, you know, the condescending. It wasn't in any sense.
Right.
It was almost, dare I say, in a very respectful way, almost just like a meeting and almost on this, hey, what do you want to do with your show? What do you want to do? Like, he asked as many questions.
Were
as
you nervous?
As he,
or it was just like this.
It was interesting.
Dude.
I was excited. I was genuinely excited because he really, once again, I mean, you always have to give the disclaimer now. But controversy aside, just as a performer, just as a television star.
Well, that's a weird thing,
as a businessman, you know.
Yeah, it's over for him, though, now.
Oh, man.
How do you position him in your brain now? I mean, are you able to keep it separate? Because I know you do bits on it.
I grew up in an environment, and this isn't to speak to the hood versus, you know, whatever, but I know that my personal experience, I grew up in an environment where you had to separate the two.
Just in humanity, in people. What do you, like an example?
My best friend.
Yeah.
Sold drugs.
Right.
He's a liar. Like, right. You know, some of my brother's closest friends have murdered people. Right. And so just this type.
Back in the day. Right.
It's all.
We're the grown-ups now.
The justice system is taking care of what it needed to take care of.
Oh, yeah?
And whatever, uh-huh. And some people, you know, unfairly targeted, whatever. Anyway.
Okay.
But you separate people have done bad things, basically is what I'm saying, right? And this is not the popular opinion, but you learn to separate, to have remove. It's not that you need to associate all the time. Like some people, you don't need to. But just on a purely viewing someone,
right?
You learn to separate the two,
right?
And you don't, like, because sometimes it's for survival. So when you grow up and you don't, and it's not a lot of money, right?
Mm.
Like, there may be a guy who's a piece of shit,
right?
But he offers something valuable to the group,
right?
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it may be like, you know, this guy is a piece of shit, but girls like him.
Right.
And he gets girls.
Right.
So.
Okay. He can hang out.
He can hang out. Or this guy's a piece of shit, but he has a car.
Yeah. Right.
You know what I mean?
Like,
it's like, oh, he's an asshole.
It's a stolen car.
It's a stolen car. And we are all in danger right now.
But we're
going
to get him.
But he has a car. You know what I mean? Like, and so even if it's just a thing that you offer, like when you think about like, you know, it's like a village.
Yeah.
Right. Like, you think every caveman was just a great guy, the hunters and the.
No, that guy's an asshole, but he'll kill a lion.
Who else knows how to kill lions?
Exactly.
He knows how to kill lions. The rest of us don't know how to do that.
We're going to have to put up with
him. Sure, he fucked my wife.
Right, yeah. Yeah, I think that's a line, though.
Yeah, I know. But it's a lion, man.
Yeah,
a lion. You got to think about lions.
Yeah.
But it's that thing of separating. Not only that.
But also, what about justice?
I mean, here's the thing. My mom always has this this saying. She says, I don't have a heaven or hell to put you in.
Yeah.
And she says that, a lot. And here's the thing.
What does that mean?
It means this. It means, once again, it doesn't mean you associate yourself. You know what I mean? But it means that
I'm not God.
And I'm not. And where judgment, like, I'm not a judge and jury. And if doing anything wrong, that's disgusting.
Yeah.
You feel like you shouldn't have to say it, but just so it's clear.
Yeah.
Because I'll get a
tweet.
You're
not a fan of. What you're saying is you're not a fan of Bill Cosby, the rapist.
I'm not a fan of any rape.
Exactly.
Not a fan of any horrible, that's a disgusting act.
Yeah.
It really is.
The worst.
It's a disgusting act. Yeah. I mean, as it's up there with murder. It ruins lives. And you know what I mean? Like, and just, you know, knowing women who've gone through that.
Right.
It's horrible.
Right.
It's absolutely horrible.
Right.
You know what I mean? So it's like, in no way am I trying to say,
He gets a pass.
But he's so great.
Right.
You know, but it is a thing where it's like, this is horrible, this is disgusting. But where the level of judgment, where I can't, you can't, and no one should, I think, like, torment themselves with being a judge. Because, like being a judge takes a lot of weight and is a lot of pressure. And it's a lot of torment if you don't, as my mom would say, have a heaven or hell to put anyone in, or a cell to put anyone in, mm-hmm. or a whatever. Now, if you take that up as your cause, that's your right.
Yeah.
That is absolutely your right. If you want to push toward that justice, and we all have a bit of a responsibility for that.
Right.
But it's just like, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, you can't torment yourself on a personal level with just like, because Bill Cosby himself is still a great special.
Nothing you can do about that.
There's nothing you can do about that.
But,
you know what I mean?
But Bill Cosby, here's the fucking difference is that the fact that he hasn't, you know, publicly cop to anything.
Yeah.
Is that there's obviously a pathology. He's got a problem. But Richard Pryor would have talked about it.
Well, Richard
you know, like I doubt he would have done it.
I mean, Richard Pryor talking about shooting his wife's car out and just all these things. Yeah. He exposed his soul. I mean, that's the beauty of him.
Yeah.
Know,
so then it becomes a question. It's like, this man, Cosby's soul is in trouble.
Mm-hmm. Which, what do you have anything to do with?
Nothing.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, like, I don't have anything to do with anyone, so, you know, like, I have nothing to do with it.
Yeah, but, you know, but you can have opinions and you can, like...
Yeah, once again, and hopefully we all have the same opinion the matter.
Yeah, definitely.
I hope we all have the same opinion on the issue itself of just like,
Who else? How did your relationship with Spike Lee unfold?
Because
he directed the special.
He directed the special. I wanted someone that... could capture like a documentary type feeling.
You reached out to him?
Yes, I called him.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, the Hollywood version, the industry version rather, of, you know,
told my
a
agent.
Guy called a guy. But then, I mean, it became really direct pretty immediately.
What'd you think of him as a man?
As a man?
Yeah.
Spike is, I really respect, I mean, he's convicted. Like, he's convicted, and like, what he believes in, he believes in. And we had, you know, I mean, I think it's right to share, like, we had discussions about things
like what
I mean in the bit he was very adamant about me not I open talking about how, like, with the Trayvon Martin thing and how, like, these horrible things happen, but you don't really care, right? And we had a disagreement in what the perspective of that was. I had to explain to him what the perspective was, because he took it as, you know, like, but people do care. But I'm like, but do they? You know, and to me, I say it as a challenge and as a very real, harsh, personal realization of, oh, man, I'm allowing life to go on. And I'm not saying you should. I'm just saying it's a reality of a lot of times these tragedies happen.
It's about social responsibility.
Social responsibility. And that's what the bit's about. And we had great conversations about it. Just talking about, like, yeah, this is what I meant by that. This is why I said it. But he was honest and he was open with it. And, you know, like, and he was very much so, like, yeah, there were a few things in
there. So his angle was, is it not irresponsible for you to say that nobody cares.
Yeah, to say that nobody cares. And I said, I think it's irresponsible of me not to say that.
Right.
Because it's like, no, and because I
don't, most people, it's not my life.
It's not my life. Yeah, that's most people.
Right.
And once again, going back to even what we were just talking about, like, I mean, at some point, you do have to take some type of social responsibility. And there are things that we can change and we need to actively change. That's why I said it, because it's this challenge. And if it made you feel like, well, I do care, the hope and the intention was that people, if you thought I was wrong about it, mm-hmm. that it would motivate.
Well, what was the community of your childhood?
Lower class, mm-hmm. you know, people doing things they needed to survive, factory type jobs, that type of thing.
But working class.
Working class.
Was
working
not class, a, yes. Like a ghetto situation.
No.
Hard to know.
Where's the line?
I don't know.
I mean, were people selling drugs? Were people doing?
Sure.
Yeah. Like,
yeah,
it's,
that was the
here's
neighborhood.
The thing, here's the thing. If I didn't grow up in the ghetto, if it wasn't the ghetto, then, I mean, someone needs to change the wallpaper. Because it's looking a lot of, you know what I mean? Like, it's like, who am I? Here's the thing, I don't want to label it.
Right.
You know, like, right. Because I would love for it have not to have been. Yeah.
How, like, were you in danger many times?
Yeah. So, hey.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Who
yeah.
knows?
Right.
You know
right.
what I mean?
Sure.
Like, where there are drive-bys, like, across the street from my house, directly across. Yeah.
Okay.
So, I mean, here's the thing. To some people, that sounds like a vacation spot, and that's not a ghetto.
Right.
To me, not so much. You know, it's like you grew up with a real life. Once again, like a real life, you know, all right. You know, and but with that said, I also don't want to make it sound like it was just the worst. And there are worse places.
But it's interesting, getting back to Spike's point, is that, you know, if you grow up, you know, in that type of community where it's not unusual for that kind of shit to happen.
Yeah.
You know, like, I guess maybe what he was trying to address, and I don't know, was that, we can't, you know, speaking, I would say, as him, is mm-hmm. that, you know, black people mm-hmm. can't disassociate.
Yeah.
Is that?
So here's the thing.
Yeah.
As a black person, as a black comic, there are so many rules, right? And there's a difference between
There are
because
unspoken.
It's saying that I'm as a black comic, especially, I'm not supposed to say that.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like that's not a thing that I'm supposed to say.
Is that where Spike was coming from?
Yeah,
right.
It's like you're not supposed to say this.
Right, right.
And part of like, listen, not to sound like, well, this is my, but I do want to contribute to not only comedy, not only the artist experience.
Yeah.
Like you want to contribute and push every experience further. So part of my job is to say those things that are true that I'm not supposed to say. To break that rule is part of my responsibility because. It's inhibiting. It's inhibiting the art. It's inhibiting the consciousness to not say these things. To not, you know what I mean.
Right.
So I have to.
Right, but it's also interesting that your trajectory was not the standard black comic trajectory. You didn't come out of black clubs.
No. Yeah. No.
So you were able to have this, you know, this thought provoking exchange mm-hmm. with a mixed audience, if not white leaning audience.
Yeah,
most of the time.
Yeah, yeah, and when you're at the store, you're at the improv, you're at the, you know, it's not all black audiences. And by the way, I mean, whenever I'm in front of a black audience, there is a certain amount of like comfort and like excitement of just like, oh great, you know,
now I can really do it.
Yeah, we can really go for it. Because the whole thing, I really believe my purpose is to contribute to expanding consciousness especially within art. You know, you try and let it go, even let it permeate and go beyond that, but it's to expand consciousness, and everything that I do is rooted in that. Everything in the saying these things that you're not supposed to say but are honest, even the way we shot and did the special, all of that was to expand consciousness.
When did this idea, this vision of yours take hold? I mean, like, it wasn't at the shoot store. So when did you start to acknowledge the idea of art?
It's a thing that I've always respected, right? The things that I always gravitate toward are the things that mean something, like that kind of mean something and help expand consciousness, mm-hmm. right? Like, so even before wanting to do,
like, what,
even at the shoe store, the reason I always watch The Daily Show is because Jon Stewart, I think, genuinely does a service to society,
right?
Because it's the source of news for
cutting
people.
Through hypocrisy.
Cutting through hypocrisy.
And getting to the truth.
Yes, and informing people.
Yeah.
Because it is a thing where, you know, if you try and read about, you know, what's happening in politics through the Associated Press, it's not as clear as Jon Stewart explaining it to you at 11
or
o'clock.
Rachel Maddow.
It's Jon Stewart. It's clear and it's humorous,
right?
And it's like this. That's what art is to me. It is medicine and applesauce because it's fun and it really is saying
makes
things.
People see things differently. It so makes, like so like you want to blow minds. Like, you know, you got you, people walk through life every day and all of a sudden you make them think of things, like you just tweak the knob a little and they're like, I never thought about that one.
Yes,
I'm responsible.
The expansion of consciousness.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, and those are the things that I've always gravitated toward. It's the, you know, it's always a thing because other, once again, what looks good in a time capsule?
Right.
You know, what deserves to be in a time capsule? You know, like, yeah. And that's always been where my head is, even in what I would watch and how I would spend my time and just in self-education. It's always like, let's read the guys that lasted. Let's read the guys that mattered.
Who?
Let's start at like Frank O'Hara, right?
Okay, yeah,
Frank
sure.
O'Hara is this poet who,
great poet.
From the New York School of Poetry,
yeah.
who just... In his the way he structured poems, mm-hmm. the way he did things,
yeah.
it mattered. It right. influenced people.
I think he was the poet laureate for a while, wasn't he?
Yeah, yeah. My favorite poem is "My Heart" uh-huh. by Frank O'Hara. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not gonna cry all the time. I'm not gonna laugh all the time. You know, like these. I wanted to read all of his anything I can get my hands on Frank O'Hara on. Yeah.
yeah,
as much as I could.
Yeah.
Just. At Barnes & Noble,
sure.
that was like, you know. Which,
sitting
which,
there.
It's the same thing with like art. I went into the Whitney.
The
new
nice,
one.
Nice, right?
It's really, really
that
nice.
That was a great exhibit, that one they got up. Was their collection through the years, right? Just the,
yeah, yeah, yeah,
yeah,
that's
yeah,
a,
yeah,
yeah.
I just saw it.
It's fantastic.
Amazing.
It's fantastic.
Goes through the protests, through the periods.
Yeah.
Like, you know, all the different types of art.
Yes.
And then like the 60s and the 70s.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
So I brought that up to say like the same thing with like poetry or anything. It's like, it's always dangerous territory. Because then I don't want to go to the classic I don't know art but I know what I like. All I know is my interpretation.
No, but that's all you need to know.
But
that comes back to the same thing of you know what you do on stage is if you're honest. The thing is
yeah.
that, you know, there's always going to be people with an education or intellectuals that are going to question your reaction to it because they're going to put it into a different context. But the pure reaction of somebody who's just sort of like, I want to feed my head.
Yeah.
And you have that thing hit you like that.
Yeah.
That's honest.
Yeah, that's honest.
And then if you want to chase it down the pipe and learn more shit about where it came from or who that guy was, that's a whole other, that's another expedition.
That's a whole other thing, yes.
Right.
And you can choose to go down that route
sure.
or not. So,
sure, and ruin it for yourself.
Yeah, and ruin it for yourself, yes. And just yeah. that's a whole, you got to go to college again. It's a whole lifestyle change.
Right.
But just, you know, like reading, educating, like just trying to educate yourself.
Feed your head.
Feeding your head.
Like, because there are those things, like especially if you're not, and most people aren't educated in poetry or contextualizing O'Hara in where he came from poetically,
yeah.
that if you just deal with the meat of his expression or the painting, like sometimes when paintings are supposed to be provocative in the same way you do a comedy, it's nice to know the movement.
Yes.
Like these motherfuckers were trying to turn it upside down.
If you go to a Caravaggio exhibit, right?
Yeah.
If you see it, you need to know the context of the movement. You need to
sure.
know that,
it helps.
A lot of the art
yeah.
is in the shadows.
Sure. Well,
you
know, like, Caravaggio is sort of like, oh, there, look at that
yeah,
dude. Yeah.
yeah, I went to comedian Kevin Christie. We went to LACMA, and he just basically...
Oh, he schooled you?
He schooled me.
Yeah.
And it was like, oh, and you learn the context. He schooled me on like the context
uh-huh.
of art. And yeah. and so it's like, with comedy, with all of it, I just... Yeah. I'm interested in where I stand in art.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Like,
well, yeah.
like it, beyond comedy.
Yeah.
You know, like, you just look at what this show is, right? You have the president of the United States
yeah.
here.
Yeah.
This isn't just, you know what I mean? This isn't just like, you know, like, and my favorite thing reading when the president was there
yeah, yeah.
is just like, they have to deal with you now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, and just like writing about like, just yeah. a thing, first of all.
Podcast.
It hasn't been, you know, in the context of, especially comedy,
yeah.
it hasn't been a little thing since it started, right?
Yeah, right.
But then you just watch it grow, and
yeah.
you watch it grow, and
yeah.
you watch it grow, and they have to deal with you. And now, even this show itself is in the context of art,
yeah.
is in the context
sure.
of journalism, in the context
yeah.
of documenting things. So
crazy.
it's like this show exists in that context
yeah.
now, and I want my stand-up, I want my whatever to exist in art.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Sure,
like, and so you need to read about artists. You need to explore art.
Yeah.
You need to explore
sure, man.
And the art of everything.
Sure, man.
You know, and
yeah.
not just poets and painters. There's a art. I would argue there's an art to being a reality star. You know what I mean? Like,
I'm not sure they're aware of that.
But. Yeah, I don't think I don't. But here's the thing: I actually got an argument.
You're gonna have to contextualize that.
Contextualizing Kim Kardashian
sure.
to even the way Paris Hilton did it.
Sure.
Fewer mistakes.
Yeah.
Smarter about it.
Yeah.
Capitalizing off every nook and cranny of it.
But okay, I understand what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there's a skill set and craft. And also, you know, putting ambition together with how to to get your hustle on to make a few bucks.
There is,
but you're talking about expanding consciousness.
I don't know if
that,
yeah. No, but I'm just saying. That is a skill. That is a skill. Here's the thing. Whether we like to admit it or not, Kim Kardashian is going to be remembered.
Okay, but that's different.
Explored.
The
phenomenon is going to be explored. Which then, I mean, to a certain degree, rather, I don't even like to say, but it influences.
Sure.
You know what I mean? It influences. And so, like, being influential is a part of art. Like, that's a big part of it.
But still, from what I'm hearing,
it is a skill set. It is.
No, I know what you're saying. I'm not arguing. I'm just saying that, you know, there is something about being remembered and historical.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can do that by not expanding any consciousness at all. And actually, and if you do, it might be in the wrong direction.
Yeah.
So, like, there's the idea of art to expand consciousness.
Yeah.
And I think what you're saying is, like, you'd like to expand consciousness, but you'd like to be well known for it.
Yes. Yes. Thank you very much.
So I just want to make sure separate you from Kim Kardashian out of respect for you.
I really appreciate that. I really appreciate that.
Yeah.
But it's with, I'm saying it, but when I'm saying, like, the art of anything is just really within anything in context, just getting the most out of it.
No, I get it.
You know what I mean?
That for anybody to rise out of whatever their life is and have an impact at all, and a lasting one,
mm-hmm.
Requires some set of skills,
yes.
of some kind.
You know, absolutely.
Whether they're good or bad or whatever. I get that.
Yeah.
And for you to make the impact that you want to make, you know, you're still going to have to trust yourself and the machines that are in place, because it becomes that thing where you make a choice not to do a 4.5-minute set because you don't represent yourself. If all of a sudden, you know, you get big and they're like, well, we need that 4.5-minute set. And you're like, I think I can do it now.
Yeah. Oh, you'll see a lot of that. No, but you'll see a lot of that. Cut to me just in a suit.
It's a lot of money. It's a concession. It's a Faustian deal.
Yeah.
Hey, look, you know, the NBC show, we picked it up, but it's like, it's not doing great. We need you to go on this reality show.
It's like you maintain your integrity as an artist, and you try and do things that make sense. The reason I wanted to work with NBC is because it's such a machine.
Sure.
It's such a huge machine, but I really think you can get something good and interesting through it.
A lot of people they're no longer in the business.
I know, right? As I prepare for battle, I put it on armor, suiting up, just like, all right, you guys. It's just like, people watch, and they're just like, well, he talked about art a lot.
Yeah.
Fuck this
just
is.
Just sitting there talking your mouth out. You're shooting your mouth off to suits about Caravaggio.
About Caravaggio.
What do we
like,
got here with
they're
this?
They're like,
kid?
We're trying to sell Charmin.
That's it.
Yeah, which is the battle.
But when you got here, there was a lot of my peers who I hadn't seen you yet, you know, because mm-hmm. I don't know, like, maybe you go on later than me, or I wasn't going out to the clubs as much, but
yeah.
A lot of my guys, like Kevin and Al Madrigal and Brennan, you know, all these guys are like, this dude's a miracle. And like, I don't know where he came out of the clouds. And I'm like, who the fuck is this kid? I've never seen anything like it. I'm like, I've been doing comedy 25 years. I've never seen anything like this guy. And then I'm like, where is he? And like, Neil's like, he's on my couch. And I'm like, what?
Yeah, that's pretty accurate.
The second coming's on your couch? Yeah, I know, man.
Yeah.
Well, what the hell happened? How'd that? So you get to L.A.? What was the first set? Where'd you do it?
First set was at the Comedy Store. First time ever
on
doing
Sunday?
Stand-up on Sunday. Ever in my life.
Okay. How long you been doing it now?
Started in 2008, almost 7 years.
Okay.
I would tell people, I would just lie.
Right.
People would say, how long you been doing stand-up? And I've been a couple years when I first moved, because I didn't want the crutch.
I didn't want a mythology for yourself. You're like, yeah, I've done a couple years.
A couple years. Yeah. Well, just very vague about it.
But then where'd you from? Where'd you start?
Yeah, North Carolina. Just kind of bounced around. I never did it before in my life.
That's why you didn't talk to people.
Get in and out. They're on to you.
Yeah.
But because I didn't want that like, not bad for I was, like, judge it honestly as a set.
Right.
Just as a set.
Right.
Because this, it may be better than, you know what I mean?
How'd you prepare for that first set?
Just pace the same way I prepare for this one.
But
just
you had some ideas. Around. You didn't
so
go.
A couple ideas, a couple thoughts. Go up first at the open mic. No audience members. Comics in the back.
The worst.
Sun is shining through that window.
It's not an easy room either.
Not an easy room. That's why I wanted to do a special there because it's just it's first place I ever did.
Hit or miss, dude.
Hit or miss. Easily.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Easily.
They're not going to indulge dangerous. Too much bullshit.
It really is, and I know comics say it, but it really is one of the hardest, by hard meaning it is something you have to figure out every night. It keeps you on your toes.
Well, you got the first trick of that original room is how the fuck am I going to get comfortable in here?
Yes.
And because it'll bring your fear right to the surface.
Yes.
So you have to battle your fear for however long it's going to take for you to be like, I own this stage now.
There is a table at your feet.
Oh, I know. Yeah, it's right
you
there.
You know what I mean? There's a table. And now,
if the lights are right, you can't see much past that table.
Yes. And now that food is served there, people are eating nachos.
Garbage. Yeah. Eating garbage. Yeah.
at your feet. You know what I mean? That's a, it's a lot to try.
And it's just there's a rawness there. You just feel that room is there's a couple rooms that are, despite their reputation, are hard as fuck. The Comedy Cellar is another one. Hard as fuck.
Love it.
Yeah.
Love it.
Because once you pop that place, you're like, fuck, I'm not afraid of anything.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, and then the Comedy Cellar momentum is great. Some of my favorite some of my favorite moments in stand up is also after Che and Louie.
Yeah.
You know, at the cellar, and then you're up. You know, and once again, where do you fit in this space?
Well,
you know what I mean? And that's
you better make them know you really quit. You better hit right out of the gate.
You don't have a fucking chance.
That first one goes in the toilet.
If you don't, it's like,
it's over.
You know what I mean? Yeah. I love. That's what I loved about following Dane when you're at the factory and all these things, because it's like when you're starting out, you're just this unknown person.
Right.
And nobody's there to see you, but you have the heat or whatever, and so you're on these shows.
Right. And you got to know that the biggest trick is, you learn it once or twice where you're like, I'm going to follow that dude. He's got that energy. I'm just going to go full on.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's like, that didn't work.
No.
So then eventually you're just sort of like, I'm going to suck it right down to me.
Truth.
And then wait.
Truth.
Wait.
What?
You're good at that.
Do you
Bill
want?
Burr's good at that. I might have to eat it for six.
Maybe. Yeah. You know what I mean? But it's like, this has to be me.
That's
it's
right.
like if,
right.
if every home, you know, I walk into, you got to redecorate it, man.
That's right.
You got to adjust
That's
it to
right.
you.
That's right. You got to do it quick.
You got
to
do it quick.
Just by standing there.
Just by standing there. Just by your energy. Just unspoken.
Yeah.
You have to do
so
it.
That is that crucial moment where it's like, if you let fear win in that moment,
mm-hmm.
it's going to be a long, long 15 minutes.
the longest 15 minutes of your life. You are up there. You're just sitting there. You're waiting for it's a green light over to your left.
No, please.
You just
please.
Waited.
How long
have I been here?
Yeah.
You know, and that, of course, those are the nights when the next guy's not there yet. And now I got to do 20.
Yeah, I've been up here a while.
I got to do 21.
And you know what's amazing about that feeling? It can always happen.
It can always happen. Always happen. Tuesday or Saturday. It could always happen.
Especially in the OR, you're like, that's all I'm getting.
Yeah.
I think I'm getting.
Yeah.
I'm not going to go higher than that. The place is full.
Yes.
I'm not going to get more
than
that.
It's packed.
I'm not get
that's
more.
What I. That's what I love about the OR. The OR could be full and dead.
Ugh, yeah. It's crazy.
It could be packed. Usually.
What is that?
Under most circumstances.
What is
that? Just by the nature of the
people.
Room being.
Right.
People.
Yeah.
A room full of people. Any other place. You're
going to
do
something.
You're going to get something. The OR can be packed to the brim.
Nothing.
Yeah.
The worst. They're just sitting there. You're like, what is the fucking dark? Like, I believe the building on certain nights has a mood to it.
Yes. Hey.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I know.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
The OR shifts with the moon.
Yeah, man. Shifts with something.
It shifts with something. And that's what, you know, but it keeps you on your toes.
Yeah.
And you got to adjust that energy.
Yeah.
So I'm there. I'm up first.
Yeah.
Open mic.
Yeah.
Do it. Love it.
Go, did
it
you go with?
No, yeah, it goes horrible.
But you got the bug. You're like,
I'm
this
excited.
Is where
I'm excited.
I live. Yeah.
I'm excited to share thoughts.
Right.
You
right.
know what I mean?
Sure,
like, it's like, I'm excited to share thoughts. I'm excited to say, hey, this is how I feel about this thing.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Hey, do you not feel that way?
Right.
Great, because I want to talk about it. You know, like, I'm excited.
And when did people start noticing you? Like, because it was the store guys, right? Like Neil and
yeah,
Al.
Oh, man. Neil and Al and Brett, genuinely amazing. Argus.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Sure.
And Bill, I mean, Burr, was very, he said very, he gave some very nice compliments to me early on in my career. And, you know, it was just do those cosigns in front of, you know, at the time, Tommy at the Comedy Store, just like, put this kid up.
Yeah.
You know, like, and so, I mean, I'm, you know, very, very blessed just to have, like, people.
Yeah, it was pretty astounding, you know, because, like, you know, I'm a cynical fuck. So, like, you know, when everybody starts, you know, talking about this kid, Carmack, I'm like, well, how could it? I've seen this happen before.
It's Patrice.
Yeah.
You know, and this is.
Wait, you got to talk to Patrice?
I got to talk to Patrice.
Oh, that must have been something.
One of the most amazing. It really was. It was one of those.
Well, it was one of those, like, who the fuck you think you are?
So he, Neil, I can't remember if it was Neil or Ian, because Ian Edwards that introduced me to Patrice on the patio outside the store, and he said,
"What was he doing out here?" He was out of place.
He was here for a few days for some meetings,
holding up the patio.
Yeah, just holding up the patio, holding up court.
Who are these fucking people?
Holding up court? There's a line. Uh-huh. You know, I'm with a friend of, like, I think it was Neil or it may have been Ian. I don't know, but either way, they say, "Hey, have you met Gerard?" And the first thing he said. Oh, yeah, I heard of you. You supposed to be that next nigga. Supposed to be that next Chappelle nigga. Like, it's just very much, and that's what he said to me. And then he talked to me for 30 minutes. I mean, it's really a blessing. I had some great conversations with, like, that.
Well, he's like, you know, it's like, you know, there's like, the beauty of Patrice was it's sort of like, you know, I feel good talking to him. Mm-hmm. It's going right into me, but I'm not sure it's right.
But it's honest.
Oh, yeah.
He's not lying
to
you.
Right. He's telling his truth. It was honestly,
and this is the only conversation I've ever had with him. 30 minutes. I remember it because it's the first time I ever missed a show.
Yeah.
I was on my way to a spot, and here's the thing. I'm not even going to pull that whole, I just knew it, because I didn't know. I just, for whatever reason, couldn't walk away. Couldn't even do the polite, like, I got to run. Yeah. And I'm sure he would have understood. I stood there and I just missed my spot. I'm, you know, obviously given the context of this was pretty close to when he went to the hospital.
Yeah.
This is like months before that. Yeah. So, like, obviously you're like, oh, well, thank God that I did. But, very kind of a vulnerable conversation.
It was exciting to be around that guy.
Yeah.
And there's not a lot of guys.
Yeah. He was so, he talked about mistakes that he made.
Yeah.
He talked about it. Once again, same thing with, it wasn't that like, let me tell you something.
Right.
It was like, this is my experience.
Right.
It was very much so they, you know, it was met with this level of, like, respect. I've been really blessed to, like, for whatever reason, people just approach with this level of, like, honest, like, respect, and, like, this is what I went through, and I really appreciate that.
I think there's a brotherhood to comics, you know, and I think that comics, especially guys in my generation and sometimes older, but they get a little detached. But guys who are still in the you know, at the clubs and stuff,
yeah,
that when they see something or they feel talent or they feel like you're one of us,
mm-hmm.
that they're decent fucking dudes. That, you know, they're sort of like, you know, what can I do to help this guy?
Yeah,
because he's good for us and he's great at what he does and he makes it. You know, we believe in comedy.
Yeah, I mean, down to Neil Brennan gave me shoes.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, Al Madrigal gave me clothes and some of my first paying gigs. Brett Ernst would just slide me cash to eat.
Really?
You know what I mean?
Like, so you came out here, you didn't do the Craigslist. You didn't have a place to live.
I lived on a love seat for a month, then I moved into a studio apartment with four people. We shared small, like, I mean, just the most uncomfortable couch, lived on couches, like that type of thing. I didn't have a day job here. It really is by the grace of God that, you know, but I only thought, I focused on comedy. I focused on just like.
You didn't give a fuck about the day job. No day job.
No day job.
What's the point?
No. Why? Yeah, that's not what I want to do.
Right.
Yeah, and here's the thing. And I mean, once again, it's a blessing to be able to do it. And people were very, like, you know, I mean, I think about that a lot, man. Just like, you know, like Neil and Brett and all these guys that just believe in you.
Yeah.
You know, like early on, like, you know, and it's just. I mean, it's so beautiful, man.
I've never seen anything like it, really.
Oh.
Where, like, just like, no, and it was a beautiful thing, you know, that, you know, and to hear you tell it was that they knew your talent, they knew your commitment.
Dove Davidoff and Brian Callen bought me a car.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I mean, just like genuine belief.
You better not let us down.
Like, I was like, man, if I fuck this up, you know what I mean? Like, it was like, all right. It's like, you better focus on comedy.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, because it's just like, you know, even if not for yourself, for for them.
Right.
You know, they, these beautiful people really believed in you and looked out. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a sweet story, man.
Yeah. It's amazing.
And
it's
worked out.
Oh, man.
You got a place to live now?
I'm doing all right.
You can buy your own pants?
Doing okay. I got a couple pair now.
What is the NBC show? When's it happening? Doing how many?
We're doing five more episodes. We did a pilot and then five more episodes. So
six total.
Six total.
You're going to run the pilot.
We're going to run the pilot.
They love the pilot.
Who knows how they feel about the pilot?
NBC.
We like it. NBC,
you don't know?
That listen, you assume love. I don't think, you know, love has anything to do with
right?
any of it.
So you haven't had to fight any fights yet?
Oh, it's always a fight.
No, but I mean with the suits too, on the script level?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Oh, yeah?
It's always a fight. Uh-huh. I mean, it really, it's, here's the thing. And I don't even want to make it sound like it's only contention because, I mean, they're like, you said with the Letterman, like there are some great notes. There are some, this makes the story better.
Sure. Yeah.
Like, and
you can't
some,
just be like, they
again,
don't know anything.
People that really believe in the idea and like really, so I don't want to make it seem like us versus just right. that. But it is, you're trying to change perspective, consciousness, or way something's perceived, what something can be, mm-hmm. what you can say, what you can't say. And you when battling that, it's like to change habits mm-hmm. is the hardest thing.
What's the world?
I have a live with my girlfriend. It's based on my family because what's interesting about my relationship with the family is it is people that believe really strongly in things. Like we a lot of arguments growing up
in your
over
family.
Over everything
between and you and your mom and dad and your
between
brother.
Between all of us over
everyone's
any,
still together. Your parents still together
over any given thing. Yep, parents still together. And
your dad still driving?
Still driving.
What's your mom do?
She's now. Early retirement.
Uh-huh.
Was a secretary at a children's hospital for 31 years.
Uh-huh.
And I'm sure she won't mind me sharing. She's just let go from her job. 31 uh-huh. years, loyal service, same children's hospital, just let go, right? Cutbacks or whatever.
Pension, though?
Not even.
No.
Not the amount of respect that she deserved.
Fuck.
You know what I mean? Like
worst.
Very much
children's
so. Just
hospital.
Like children's hospital. And just not the amount of respect she deserves. Just gone. I mean, it's a woman who sat with children who tried to commit suicide and would talk and pray with them. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Like, and just 31 years. Like, gone. Right?
How's she handling it?
Fine. My mom's one of the strongest people I've ever met.
Uh-huh.
So
everyone's
fine.
Got strong opinions in the
strong
show.
Opinions in the show. Strong opinions, some unpopular opinions, just trying to see both sides of an argument. I'm crazy inspired by Norman Lear. I haven't. I saw him speak twice, actually. Once at Bad Robot. They were nice enough to invite me to just this very private thing to see Norman Lear speak. And then I saw him speak to Phil Rosenthal, just this conversation about his book and about, you know, creating.
Yeah, I talked to him in here.
Yeah. So you
like, you should meet him. Why don't you meet him?
I would love to. I would love to.
He'd love to come see you.
Oh, that'd be great.
I wonder, man. He likes to go out and shit.
By the way, I had a great conversation with Rob Reiner about you just like even in making this, like between the conversation with Cosby and I talked with Reiner, I saw Lear speak, I called Phil Rosenthal, talked about things and we just to
so find, the model is all in the family? In
yeah,
a way?
If there is a model, yeah, it's all in the family.
Right.
Because it's truthful.
You
want to
go
and
the
provocative
you want to go the juice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, like honesty on television. Because you don't tune into a sitcom to see you tune in for character and perspective. You don't tune in to see, you know, like, oh, that story's crazy. Because that's what Netflix these dramas are for. And even on NBC, they have dramas that do that.
You tune in to see, you build a relationship.
Relationship.
With
exactly.
the character.
Exactly. And in building that relationship, the people that I want to build relationships with are people who have strong views and strong opinions and aren't just saying just sassy things every 15 seconds.
Uh-huh.
You know, like it's
jokes.
It's just jokes. It's just like conversation, real
Who's
thing.
Playing your dad?
David Alan Grier. Yeah. Yeah. He's fantastic, by
sure,
the way.
Man.
He's like, I mean, and an actor.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like, it's
yeah.
like, a, he's an actor. Yell yeah. job. You're talking to Tony Award. You know, like.
Who else is in it?
Loretta Devine.
Oh,
plays
yeah.
my mom.
Nice.
Also amazing actors.
Yeah.
Amber West, who's fantastic and just like fun. She plays my girlfriend. Lil'Rel Howery plays my brother.
Uh-huh.
Another comic, Tiffany Haddish, plays his ex-wife that he can't afford
her.
To leave. Yeah,
yeah.
She's amazing. Like, it's really, and it, honestly, the chemistry is there. You know what I mean? Like a very real chemistry.
How you doing with the acting? You feeling it?
I like acting.
You taking any lessons? Got a coach on hand?
I spoke with an acting coach once. She was really, really great. I have this relationship with all school where it's a very cautious relationship because it's why, and with all due respect to anyone who's done comedy classes, the reason I'm not like an advocate of comedy classes is because you don't want to create this like box for yourself that you
system.
Can't get
up. Someone else's system.
A system. You don't want that's a, you want to create your own system.
That's right.
Seinfeld very much so has his own system.
So it goes along with your own rhythm.
It goes along with your own rhythm, but you need to find that for yourself. So same thing with acting. You know, I remember reading this thing that Denzel Washington said he went to acting school for long enough. He described it as long enough. He was like, I went for long enough. And he got what he needed, and then you get out of there before you're following the same rhythm. Once again, you don't want to do what everybody else is doing.
That's
you know,
right.
So you want to know yourself.
Find your authentic
and
self.
Acting, same thing with stand-up. It's
yeah,
just
you figure it
finding
out.
Your
you figure it out.
Self.
Take some time.
I've been watching your show. You.
Yeah. Yeah, it took a couple seasons for me to get comfortable with acting.
But
yeah.
You're Mark Maron on Maron.
That's right.
You know what I mean? Like which is the same thing that every actor that we love does. You know what I mean?
But
Jack
here's the weird thing about
Jack Nicholson.
But like those guys, you know, they took classes. Now the weird thing about about being a comic, and I'm just telling you this because I put this in my head, and it was one of the few moments where I knew something that would have frightened me before.
Yeah.
But I had no choice and I had to accept it.
Yes.
I known every motherfucker that in our trade that got sitcoms. I know them.
Yeah.
I know Brett. I know Ray. I know Louie.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't know Jerry, but I saw it. But like I said, like, all right, every one of these guys, it took at least a season for them to figure out how to act. like themselves.
Yeah.
And then you're surrounded by real actors.
Yes.
But we're us.
And
we just think we'll just do it. But it, like you watch the first season of any of those shows, you're like, ooh, it's a little stiff.
Figuring it out.
Right. And I knew that though. And like before I would have been like, oh fuck, man, I gotta figure this out before I do it.
Yeah. So you were able to just like
gonna have to eat it,
figure
dude.
It out.
You have to take the hit.
Well, thanks for the heads up.
Well, no, I'm just saying you're going to do the best you can.
You do the best you can. And
then you're going to grow into it.
You grow into it.
You
and,
might be
and
a miracle.
They find you,
I hear you're a miracle. You might be fucking Olivier in the first week.
God bless you.
All right, I'll take it.
Take it. Take it.
Well, look, I want best of luck.
Thank you.
And let's talk. I want to talk again either at the pickup.
Okay.
Or when it doesn't work out.
Either, you know what? That's a deal.
Okay, buddy.
That's a deal.
Thanks, Gerard.
This is amazing. Thank you.
Well, I think we covered it, man. That guy, he's like all lit up, that guy. Just beaming with youth and energy and creativity. It charged me up. Let's make it a little less dirty. This is a new guitar. I want to do something meditative. If I can, if I can try to do that, that would be make me feel better. So I'm just going to do the 3-chord thing. Maybe I'll throw another one in there. I don't know. Boomer lives!